It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For more than 60 years now, a UW-Madison study has closely followed the life course of thousands of Wisconsin high school graduates from the class of 1957. We explore new findings from the so-called Happy Days cohort, and you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, share comments, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Michal Engelman is a professor of sociology at UW-Madison, director of the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study. Michal, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me, Kate.
This study of more than 10,000 Wisconsin graduates touts being one of the most extensive, one of the most successful studies ever conducted in the social sciences. Why does the study deserve this distinction?
Sure, that's a great question. So, you know, this is a fascinating study because, like you said, it's the longest one of its kind in the United States. So this the study started out as a survey of high school graduates. The state of Wisconsin in 1957 decided it wanted to know what its graduating seniors wanted to study and do when they grow up. And so they did this one-time survey. It was never intended to be a longitudinal study at the time.
An innocent question.
Yeah, exactly. Sort of, you know, asking people what they wanted to study, where they wanted to do. And they actually used results from that survey in order to design the University of Wisconsin system, now known as the University of Wisconsin. But it helped them figure out where to put different campuses and what kinds of programs to establish at the different campuses. And I think at the time, they thought it was done. And what happened after that is in the 60s, a sociology professor at UW-Madison realized that those surveys were still around, and he sent postcards to the homes of these graduates. Most of them had left home by then, but their parents received those postcards, and they wrote back. And they told him, his name was William Sewell. He later became the chair of the sociology department. And they told him kind of where their children were, and he followed up with them. And there were additional surveys with them in the 70s and then later on in the 90s and into the 2000s. And somehow it became a study that wasn't just about high school students, but really followed them across the life course and has been able to look first at what kinds of jobs they had, what kind of families they built, what happens in their personal and volunteer life. And then as the cohort aged, the study aged with them and became about health, about retirement, and about family relationships and support and physical, mental, and cognitive health in later life.
Yeah, a true study of lifespan. You know, fast forward to researchers now, decades later, how do you determine what questions to ask people in the cohort?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So, you know, the study has evolved over the years, and there have been different people leading it. There have been some really great investigators at UW-Madison who have led the study at various times. I mentioned Bill Sewell, who is kind of the originator of the study. After him, Bob Hauser was the principal investigator of the study for over 30 years. And he was a scholar of education and inequality. He was really interested in how people's educational experience and trajectories impacted their occupational histories and impacted sort of both their own earnings and inequality in society at large. So the study really focused on that as participants were going through their primary working years and building families. And then about 15 years ago, the study was directed by Pamela Hurd, who is a public policy scholar and really a scholar of health and aging as well. And as participants were entering retirement, she started collecting more systematic data on their physical health, on their mental health, collecting some biological data, as well as some of the social surveys that had been collected before. And over the past few years, as participants have been in their 80s, we have shifted to really thinking a lot about cognitive health, both risk and resilience, and talking to participants about their memory and their well-being. And one of the great advantages of a study this big is that we're able to look at factors both that impact kind of why people end up having negative health outcomes in later life, but also thinking a lot about what are the factors that help people remain healthy and resilient as they grow old as well.
In the area of health factors, the study revealed early detection methods for Alzheimer's disease. What do scientists know about Alzheimer's due to this study?
Oh, that's a great question. So in many ways, one of the things that's really unique about the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study is the fact that we've had measures on participants over many years. So, in 1957, the state of Wisconsin actually wanted a lot of high school students to take IQ tests. And then over the years, we've asked participants to take a few different tests to tell us about their memory and about their recall. And so we've been able to look at how some of their educational patterns and some of their early cognitive measures are influencing how they are doing now that we're collecting more intensive measures of memory. So we've been able to look at how people's, things as, for example, like what classes you took in high school or what kinds of extracurricular activities you were involved in, how that impacts cognition when folks are in their 60s and 70s and in their 80s. And then we're also able to compare information from healthy people in the Wisconsin longitudinal cohort, as well as people who are experiencing cognitive decline, to think about how to best analyze patient data to diagnose Alzheimer's disease. And this is great because it's not just researchers who are here at UW-Madison who are able to use the data for these purposes, but also folks kind of across the country and the world who are using the data.
That's what I noticed, is just that it seems like the data is very accessible to researchers of disciplines outside social sciences. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. One of the unique things about the study is we have been funded by the National Institutes of Health since 1991 continuously. So we take that very seriously because we're effectively funded by taxpayer dollars to collect this data. And so we think that it is our job to make these data available kind of for scientific discovery more broadly. So, we collect the data, we go through very rigorous processes of de-identifying it, right, to make sure that patients' information and participants' information remains private and that no one can sort of figure out, who's who in the data. But the information, once it's in its de-identified form, becomes publicly available to researchers who register to use the data and who abide by, sort of important protections that the university has in place to make sure that research is conducted according with rules. But once we do that, we make it available to any researcher who registers with us. Mm-hmm. And so that means we've got sociologists, economists, people in public policy and psychology. But increasingly, as we've been collecting this great health data, we have folks from the medical sciences, from public health, thinking about it. And so we have been able to have people who look at physical function, people who look at a variety of particular chronic conditions, and increasingly, because we've been investing a lot recently in these cognitive measures, we have a lot of scholars in, from the world of trying to understand neuroscience and cognition in later life, who have started to use the data.
UW-Madison sociology professor Michal Engelman directs the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study, considered one of America's longest studies in the social sciences. You can be part of the discussion. Call in with questions, comments. They're welcome at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore findings from Wisconsin's Happy Days cohort, helping researchers better understand aging. For more than 65 years, thousands of graduates of Wisconsin high schools in 1957 periodically answer surveys about their lives, and the study group is now in their 80s. Call in with a question. Share your views. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Sociologist Michal Engelman directs the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study, leads the Center for Demography of Health and Aging at UW-Madison. Let's bring in Eugene in Viola. Eugene, hi. Go ahead.
Good morning. I come with a class of 57 or 58. If I make it until January, I'll be 85. And most of us in that class, that were in that class, some of us went to college and some of us didn't, but we got good jobs, we bought homes, we raised families, and we came out of college without any debt. And I was still substitute teaching until I was 82.
Wow. Wow. Eugene, thank you so much for calling in. And I think Eugene brings up some contrasts to what it may be like today for graduates. Michal, go ahead.
Yeah, no, this is great to hear. I'm really glad Eugene called in. You know, one of the things that has been really interesting about studying this cohort is thinking about how unique their experience was, right? They were graduating from high school sort of during the Cold War, right? They were they benefited both from a lot of economic growth in the years following World War II and kind of seeing the strengthening American economy. And as Eugene said, right, many of them were able to kind of go through their life course, you know, kind of pursuing either more education or jobs that still had, you know, really great working conditions, and they were able to build families in a way that many people feel is changing nowadays. And one of the things we have tried to learn from the data is about the factors that made that possible for this cohort, right? What are some of the things, not just individual characteristics, but some of the policies that were in place, the community structures and support and investments, right, that made it possible for that cohort to succeed to the extent that it has, in order to learn about both, you know, why things might be different for cohorts that are going through life right now, but also thinking about what lessons we may draw from that for the types of investments in people and communities that we should be doing.
I wonder about diversifying the cohort and your efforts there, because the study is of mostly white participants with high school diplomas. What are you hoping to do with the study to reflect Wisconsin's diverse population?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you said, this study is very unique because it's population-based, so it's highly representative of people who graduated from high school in Wisconsin in 1957, but it is a mostly white sample, which is accurate because it's reflecting who graduated from high school back then. And so, you know, the people who have participated in the cohort for the past 65 years, they're irreplaceable, right? We can't go back in time and find additional people who can provide that richness and depth of data. And we know a lot about their life, but one of the things we've been trying to do lately is think about how their experiences compare to those of other folks who are aging in Wisconsin, but maybe are not in the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study. So one recent project that we've been doing is sort of an ancillary study to the WLS is a result of my collaboration with Professor Maichu Lohr at the University of Wisconsin School of Nursing. She is Hmong American, and a lot of her research has focused on the health and well-being of the Hmong community. And folks here in Wisconsin are probably familiar with that, but the Hmong are a refugee population from Laos that were resettled in the U.S. in the aftermath of the Vietnam War and the secret war in Laos. And the U.S. government resettled them in Wisconsin and Minnesota and California largely. And so they are the state's largest Asian American population. And we have started a project trying to understand how their experience, which in many ways is so different from that of the original Wisconsin Longitudinal Study, how that compares. And we're really interested in thinking about, well, what's similar for all people who are growing old in Wisconsin together, but also what are the ways in which people's people's experiences earlier in the life course, right? What does it mean if you've been through war and stints in refugee camps and persecution mm-hmm. and migration and building a new life in a completely new place with a new language and a new environment? How does that impact your health and well-being in later life? And so by doing interviews and life histories with the Hmong population, we're hoping to learn about that and also to eventually do a small survey with this population as well, where some of the questions will be harmonized, we say, are very similar to what we've asked our long-term WLS participants, and will allow us to compare their health and well-being with the Hmong population as well.
We're exploring a decades-long study with UW-Madison sociologist Michal Engelman. You can join in. Questions 800-642-1234. I'm curious, what does it feel like for you as a researcher, as you see your study participants getting up in age? Is there more of an urgency at this point with this cohort, with these participants?
Yeah, you know, there is. I have to say, you know, we are we recognize that we are dealing with a precious population, right? We've mm-hmm. always felt that they are, you know, really, really special. And it's been really an honor to have people be willing to participate in a study for 65 years. There are mm-hmm. not any other studies in the United States who can say the same. And so we feel like people have really committed to our study. And as a result, we're committed back to them. But we also recognize that, you know, like any good thing, it can't last forever. We're happy to report that people in the WLS are doing well. As of a year ago, of last December, when our data kind of are most recent from, over 57% of the original cohort was still with us, right? Mm. But we are starting to lose folks. The fact that people are living longer and healthier than maybe other folks who were born around the same time, if we compare it to people who were born in 1939, 1940, in the general U.S. population, it's closer to 40% who are still around, and we have more than that. And so we appreciate that they enjoy greater longevity and health, and we're mm-hmm. trying to learn why that is. But we also recognize that won't last forever, and we want to make the most of the time that we have with them.
Michal, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Michal Engelman is a sociology professor and director of the Wisconsin Longitudinal Study at UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.